Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Captain America Minute, where we examine the 2011 Joe Johnston-directed feature, Captain America, the First Avenger, at the rate of 1 minute of screen time per episode. I'm one of your hosts just a few miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. This is Jim O'Kane of TVDads.com.
And I'm Hal Bryan, an airplane nerd from the home of the Experimental Aircraft Association here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
And I'm Brian Fees, a graphic novelist and lifelong Avengers comic book reader.
And I can optimistically say we're winding down the movie to just minute 70. Barely another, less than an hour left of the film. But lots of exciting, well, and tragic things going on. So let's get into a minute 70. Hal, what are we doing here?
Well, we're delivering what we think is some bad news.
Oh.
Here in minute 70. In Colonel Phillips' command tent, he leans over his typewriter, his voice heavy as he dictates. Has proven unfruitful. As a result, I must declare Captain Rogers killed in action, period. Peggy Carter steps inside, her face taut. The last surveillance flight is back. No sign of activity. Phillips glances up, dismissive. Go get a cup of coffee, Corporal. Yes, sir, the corporal says, exiting swiftly. Phillips turns his glare on Peggy. I can't touch Stark. He's rich and the Army's number one weapons contractor. You are neither one. Peggy stands firm. With respect, sir, I don't regret my actions, and I don't think Captain Rogers did either. What makes you think I give a damn about your opinions? Phillips snaps. I took a chance with you, Agent Carter, and now America's golden boy and a lot of other good men are dead because you had a crush. It wasn't that, Peggy retorts, her voice steady. I had faith. Phillips scoffs. Well, I hope that's a big comfort to you when they shut this division down. His attention shifts as the sound of boots grows louder outside. What the hell's going on out there? And here we are.
Wow, stunning stuff.
We'll know in the next episode just what is going on out there.
Yeah, and I have to say, the reconnaissance crews on the Army Air Corps there are pretty bad if they had no sign of activities and they didn't happen to notice a giant building blowing up.
Well, that was my note, is how good are these guys that they couldn't see 100 soldiers marching down a road in daylight?
I mean, one of them, granted, leather jacket thing, but one of them with a reasonable amount of red, white, and blue on him. You know, we're not all camouflaged. And you feel like they said, oh, you said Europe. Oh, sorry. We were in Burma.
Yes. Whoops. Yeah.
Our bad.
I mean, I thought it's the guys at the opening of Dr. No, the three blind mice. Where are you looking?
Whose funeral? Yours.
Yeah.
So we know the surveillance team needs some R&R, I think. Maybe they're just a little overworked, not seeing things clearly.
Yeah, we can cut them some slack. Who knows what weather was, and it's not like we had FLIR or any of the other fancy sensors. If there was any clouds, you know, whatever they would have sent over, which, you know, could have been a Spitfire, could have been a mosquito, you know, if we're relying on any British resources or American flown British resources.
Hal, I very much like that the pilot is making excuses for these pilots. That's
we got to stick together.
Yeah, you're sticking up for your team, and I appreciate that.
Somebody's got
these guys are blind as bats, but you're sticking up for this team.
They can't see a darn thing.
Well, the only FLIR they had back then was bubblegum, so it was, you know.
Thanks, Dad.
It's and I can never figure out Phillips, like, what his game is on here, except for passing the buck on everybody, because I had the feeling he was goading Rogers into going, and now and he was talking about Rogers as, you know, like Steve was drawing, like a monkey in a suit performing for
Chorus Girl.
And you know, now he's America's golden boy, and Phillips seems to be like trying to avoid catching flack over the decision, and now he's already looking for a scapegoat in Agent Carter, not only for losing Steve Rogers, Captain America, but also closing the scientific strategic reserve down.
Well, we talked about this in a previous minute. I don't agree with your opinion of Phillips goading Steve into this thing. But
it's okay for you to be wrong, Brian. That's all right.
Yeah, no, that's all right. I mean, your name is number one on the call sheet. I understand. But But I think what we're seeing here is interesting to me too, because I pick up the paradox of Phillips suddenly calling this chorus girl America's golden boy. But I think what it reveals is that a deep level of affection and maybe even respect that Phillips had for Steve that he has not allowed himself to show until now.
Okay.
That's what I get out of it, is this really was like almost a surrogate son to him. You know, he was there at the beginning. He was there for the project. He watched Steve balloon up into this super soldier.
He threw a grenade at him.
It's kind of Steve's kind of his baby, and I think he's feeling bad that maybe his baby has been lost behind enemy lines. That's how I read it.
It's also, I mean, this is the second one he's lost in this project, because he also was responsible for losing Erskine.
If you look at it that way, this whole project has just kind of turned to crap on his watch, and he's going to take the flak for it.
You know, that's an interesting take. And as you said, Brian, we had talked, Jim's theory about, maybe Phillips, a little bit of reverse psychology. This is what he really wanted for him. But for me, his thing about America's golden boy, I have which is uncharacteristic for me. I have a more of a cynical view of that, in that, like, I'm hearing that, and I'm hearing, I don't give a damn about this guy, but the country's gonna be mad. And and I don't know. You want in this scene, and Peggy is standing firm. She stands by the decision. She's speaking for Steve. She believes he did, past tense as well. You want in this scene for him to show her a little bit of comfort and a little bit of, to me, if there was going to be a point where he's going to say, you know what, I was rooting for him too. Like, this is the moment when he's decided Steve is dead. This is the moment when an empathetic person would relax the armor a little bit. And he just doesn't do that. He's telling Peggy, you had a crush and this is your fault. And as you both have said, he's looking for scapegoat. He's trying to assign blame and maybe, figure out the stuff that rolls downhill, where it's all going to land.
Is where does Phillips sit in the strategic reserve? I mean, he's like kind of a General Groves in the Manhattan Project, right? Generally, I mean, I'm trying to figure out.
That's how I took it.
We don't
But
see any, I'm sorry, Jimmy, we don't see any military officers involved that outrank him, that I recall. Do we? Do we see any generals? Is he's a colonel? He's a
No,
full-blooded colonel.
there should we've talked about this before too. It's interesting that he's a relatively low rank of colonel. He should be a general or something if he's in charge of this thing. But no, he seems to report directly to Senator Brandt.
That's the thing. He's reporting directly to the government on this project and things. And so, yeah, I think he is the Leslie Groves of this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, and he is regular army. Like, he wasn't brought. I was thinking maybe there might have been something that he was brought in as a scientist that would head up,
Oh,
we're going to give you
sure.
the rank of colonel, but you're not really in. But he hits me as regular army, just in the way that he's been going through all the training and stuff. So I don't
No,
think
it's
he.
always been clear that he does not trust these pencil neck geeks at all. He doesn't get it. He doesn't understand what these eggheads are up to, and he'd just as soon, be leading Patton's army than Captain America's army.
I get no sense of any sort of scientific
He,
background or
yeah,
anything from it, which
he's
is a
not
bit
like an o
ironic.
he's yeah, he's not Oppenheimer, he's Groves. So yeah, and it makes me think, well, if this was going on, his super soldier project, the Manhattan Project's going on, how many other stories could you tell about other, super science projects that are out there? Is there other, like, well, actually, Brian, you might know on this, the Strategic Science Reserve in comics, were there any other projects that were mentioned for them? Like, did they have other things that they were working on in the comics?
No, I don't know. And I don't even know if the SSR was a thing in the comics. I don't recall it. That's the role SHIELD would have played in the comics. Certainly not in the 40s and 50s. Contemporaneously, there was no SSR in the comics. If there were, it would have been a retcon from the maybe 80s, 90s, or 2000s.
I mean, the being in, like, as Fury became an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. and thing, that S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of appeared magically, right? I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. was basically for lack of a better term, like control and get smart. It was there.
Well, that's exactly what it is. I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. in the comics emerged from the early years of James Bond and the Man from U.N.C.L.E. I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. is Uncle, UNCLE. It was just Stan Lee and team, often Jack Kirby, just kind of riding the currents of what was hot at the time. And at the time, it was, Man from U.N.C.L.E. and I Spy and all these, undercover agents traveling the world fighting evil.
An interesting or a question that I find interesting, Brian, do you recall, did they define what Shield stood for right away?
Yes, and we can
Or
look
was
that
it?
up, but it was just Stan Lee at his most at his worst. I mean, it was just I'll look it up, but because it's just stupid. But
I just in some context, sometimes I guess I'm hard pressed to think of an example, although this was top of mind because where I work, I edit a twice yearly comic book, and the main character works for an agency that I was racking my brain this morning trying to find if we hit it's an acronym, Talon, and I'm ashamed to say that I don't know for certain because I've edited every issue for 20 issues. I don't think we ever actually spelled out what it stands for.
Oh, you're going to have to make it up.
Yeah.
So yeah,
Yeah.
now
All
we
right.
gotta figure out, okay, what
I have Shield in front of me, and Shield is actually meant for stood for a couple of things over the years. It
yeah.
started as the Supreme Headquarters International Espionage and Law Enforcement Division. And in the 90s, they changed to the Strategic Hazard Intervention Espionage Logistics Directorate. So it's basically a word salad of things that sound,
Right,
dangerous and
and it sounds better. And in the when we see what's his name in Iron Man finally defining it to Gwyneth Paltrow at
Oh,
the
yeah, like
end,
Homeland is in there.
Strategic
Yes,
Homelands.
Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division. And
Okay, so
that
it
was
was that one.
Coulson. Yeah, I'm
That was
thinking of
Coulson. Thank
Coulson.
you. Yes.
Right,
Yeah.
right.
Wow.
See,
I feel
I mean,
ignorant today.
now Hal, if you were writing a comic, I would have thought the good guys would have been working for Lyft fighting the forces of drag.
You know, the henchmen in the first issue were drag and I think it was drag and weight. So we had some henchmen named after some of the
And the big
forces.
boss is just gravity. That's your final enemy is gravity.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what you
Yes,
have
and
to defeat at the end.
but yeah, I just want to apologize to the ghost of Stanley. I was a little hard on him then. I think this stuff's just delightful. I didn't the word I was looking for was bombastic, and I think I was a little critical of Lee coming up with this stupid moniker for Shield, but this is that's comics at its best. Uncle stood for something too, and Spectre stands for something, and I don't know what they are, but
And
the Special Executive for Counterterrorism, Revenge, and Extortion.
there you
There
go. Thank you, Hal.
Redemption. See, I can remember a thing.
Okay, what about in the DC universe? What did Star Lab stand for? Was there a STAR? Anybody?
Oh, I'm
Anybody? Without
sure.
Googling,
No,
I
I
don't
gotta
know.
Google. I don't know. That's
See,
I just that's
I keep thinking, well, that was in Star City, but no, that's Mike and Or Cosmodrome.
Scientific
Yes,
and
Star City.
Technological Advanced Research.
Oh, okay.
Scientific Technological Advanced Research. Well, that's pretty straightforward. I like that one.
The stuff you learn on this podcast and Googling.
The
But
stuff
if
you
they weren't listening,
impatiently listen to us learn.
yes,
If you weren't
see?
listening to the podcast, you never would have known any of this,
Yeah,
so.
this that'll make you stop on your Peloton. It's
Now keep going.
yes.
Exercise is more important than
Yes,
this.
work leg days tomorrow, but
Maybe we should work
Oh
that into the
goodness.
podcast. Just
Yes,
make it a workout. Eight
that's
more, nine more. No, we're going the wrong direction. Wow. But Phillips, how long? I was trying to figure out where Phillips thought this was going, that they were going to shut down this strategic reserve. Is this the only thing they were working on? And if so, what? I mean, right now they were taking the war to. I mean, the last thing that we heard was he was taking the war to Red Skull. He was going after Hydra. So what other
They're clearly
arrows?
investigating the blue glowy tesseract
Yeah,
energy. They're in charge of that too.
but what other arrows do they have in their quill? I don't know what
So
you,
I wonder with that question, Stark will bring in the vibranium,
right?
Spoiler alert, and talk about the literal shield. Is that, it is number one, is Stark the Oppenheimer in this whole thing?
That's what I was thinking.
And so, something like this, this new material that we don't have very much of, is that an SSR thing, or is it just something Stark brought from home into his temporary other gig with the SSR? You could certainly extrapolate from that. There eventually could be more of this material, and there'd be other uses for it and things. And it certainly has the feel, like, especially when we first, spoiler alert, later when we see Steve get that vibranium shield, that setting, and maybe I'm misremembering, and we'll see when we get there, but that setting has a little tiny bit of that Q's lab kind of feel.
There should be
an X3 on the table or something.
Yeah, exactly. There's just sort of other stuff around. So when we get to that, we're gonna have to look at those scenes very closely and see
some guy getting shot with a machine gun in the background. Yes, exactly. And his bulletproof and then, vest and
taking off the overcoat.
Q branch. I was wondering, where does that put, this is going far afield, we're definitely in the wrong minute, but where did Stark get a hold of that much vibranium?
We'll talk about that then, but there's some backstory, I think.
Okay, yeah, I think we'll get there. I'm just trying to figure out, we never really looked at the SSR's org chart. Apparently it's Phillips, and he's got Peggy, and he's got Stark.
And that's it.
And Erskine's dead. So it's like, it's a really short org chart. And I guess he got flunkies that walk around in lab coats in the background. All those guys turning the knobs in Brooklyn, they're out of a job now. So maybe they moved to London. Oh. Now they're in the basement.
I'm going to give the listeners a reason to come back again and again. Someday we're going to talk about vibranium. We're going to talk about adamantium. We're going to talk about Wolverine. It's all going to tie together, my friends.
Oh, you stay tuned. You're crossing MC universes.
You stay tuned.
Where's my seatbelt?
Yes.
I got to buckle up for this one.
A thrill a minute.
I'd love to talk a little bit about Peggy in this minute, because clearly this man she has a crush on has died. She's brokenhearted. She thinks maybe her career's over. And she just stands there and she's going to take it because she probably thinks she deserves it maybe a little bit. I'm not sure. She's relatively passive in this minute because she's being upbraided by her commanding officer. But her heart's breaking, and you can see that. And I think Haley Atwell just plays her beautifully in this sequence.
Yeah, she.
Well, and at least she, when she's being castigated for this, she's subdued, but she's not hanging her head, oh, you're right, I'm sorry. She's not doing any of that. She's saying that she stood by her decision, and she speaks for Steve that she believes he did too. And that takes, even though it's, she's not slamming the table or screaming at Phillips, that takes some guts.
Remember
that at this point of the movie, we've all seen the movie, but at this point of the movie, the last time we saw Steve and Bucky, they were in a ball of flame.
Yeah.
So, of course, the movie isn't called Colonel Phillips, Man of Action, but it's like, there goes some of the major characters in this film.
Captain Crispy. No.
Yeah. So, this is kind of one of the biggest low points of the movie. There's many more low points to come, but this is a big downer of the moment. But, you can't go back up if you don't get down first.
No, I mean, there's the meta analysis where we as moviegoers know the movie's not going to be over after 50 minutes. But in the movie, as you're watching the movie, as you're empathizing with these characters, you're absolutely right. This is a moment of kind of sorrow and, restraint. And it's a sad moment that we allow ourselves to feel, even though we know how the rest of this is going to go. And I love that. Exactly. That's just the magic of movie making and movie watching, and that we allow ourselves to take these journeys with these characters. I think it's just one of the coolest things about being human beings.
And yeah. it makes the upcoming triumph, spoiler alert, just all the more sweet. And you appreciate it more. Like, as you said, Brian, you said it very, very well, that we know what's going to happen, but we're going to allow ourselves to go on that small journey. We got to feel this grief and then hooray.
Yeah. You gotta, I mean, you can't let the arrow fly until you pull the bowstring back. And this is the bowstring pulling back part. Lots of bad analogies to come. So please,
plenty more where that came from.
Yeah, thanks for being part of this thing. We've got some better times coming up ahead. But if you would like to continue the conversation, we're always available at Camp Lehigh, the Captain America Minute listeners base over on Facebook. If you do like the show, don't forget to subscribe and leave a like at the podcast streaming service where you found this episode. Also, please check out our great big website, capminute.com, for the latest about our podcast topics and guests. And please be sure to join us here next time on the Captain America Minute.
I can do this all day.